Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears, we will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I'm so excited to talk to my guest today. Today, I have Manny Martins Carmen. Hi, Manny.
Hello.
You have been inspiring me with fashion for quite some time. I've been following you mostly on Instagram. I love that you're also on TikTok. I'm like still slowly getting into TikTok. On Instagram, you're Manny Fashion Stylist, and on TikTok, you're Manny Carmen with a K, K-A-R-M-A-N. If anyone wants to immediately go check you out and subscribe, which I highly recommend. Manny, you recently did a series on skirts, and I wrote to you and I was like, you've totally inspired me, because I was going to Torrid like later that week or something. And I was like, I don't know how you did it, but I feel like I really need a skirt, which is not something I've worn in several decades, I would say. And there was just something about your, the warmth, the levity, the fun you were having with clothing. And you're kind of like my style of clothing. I love bright colors, big prints. I'm a little more of a maximalist. Actually, we're even matching today, aren't we? We're both wearing kind of like bright orange.
Not planned, folks.
Not planned. And you accessorize so beautifully. I used to be known for like my funky jewelry. Less so these days because I'm mostly on Zoom. But, you know, it was just, I was like, I have to talk to this person who has me wanting to buy a skirt of all things, which is probably the fashion garment that I would be least likely to ever want to purchase. So you said yes, and here you are, and I'm so excited to chat with you. And I also want to say this, but I want to say this in a way that's not weird in some way, but you're also closer to my age. Can I say that?
I'm going to be 60 this year, so.
Right?
So I'm probably older than you.
You are a little older. And I love, love, love that your hair is gray. You're so fashionable. You own your style. Cause I think there's a lot of ageism in our culture. And there's a lot of like becoming invisible that happens as we get older. And you defy that in a way that I actually find really magnetic and really powerful, and is one of the big reasons I wanted to talk to you, because I can watch 20 and 30 somethings play with fashion and I love it. And what I actually want is, as like a mid 40s person, I still have assumptions about what's okay and what's quote unquote not okay to wear. And you helped me challenge those in a way that feel really important. So welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here too. And so great to put a face to a name. So I love chatting with people.
So Manny, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about who you are, a little bit about yourself?
Well, I immigrated to Canada from Portugal with my parents, probably in the 70s. And I've lived in Winnipeg, Manitoba for my entire life. I um, I'm happiest when I'm being creative. I am a graphic designer by trade because originally I wanted to be a fashion designer or an architect, but you know, being the daughter of an immigrant family, you think, how am I going to make money? So I decided to do the commercial route and become a graphic designer. So that's kind of how I've been able to stay creative my entire life. So throughout all that, I'm also an abstract artist and have had several shows in the city and internationally. What else? I love to dress up. So I'm like a life-size Barbie.
I love that. How wonderful that you did end up also getting to be an artist.
Yes. Yeah. It really, it was interesting because, you know, doors open and you decide to walk through them or not. And you have to be open to see them. And it was one of the scariest things I've ever done was to be out there putting my art out there, because it's a lot like, you know, putting yourself out there, like being an influencer. You don't know whether you're going to be judged or not and whether the stuff is good enough. And yeah, so it was scary, but so amazing to connect with people in that visual way.
What is your, I don't know, I'm not going to ask this right, because I'm not, my husband's an artist, but I am not. But like, what's your medium? Like, what kind of abstract art do you do? Is it painting? Is it sculpture? Like,
yeah, no, it's painting. And, but I don't like to put myself in a box. So I like to do all kinds of things. But I started, most of my exhibits have been painting, so acrylic. And then I did a series on denim, which was my way of kind of connecting my fashion stuff with painting. And that was a construction and deconstruction all in one. And so it was raw denim that I purchased. And then I used this formula of bleach and some other stuff. And I used it as paint. And so I painted on the denim. And of course, you know, you have no control over what's going to happen. But yeah, so I have a whole series around that, which has been really, really fun to do.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm just wondering, like, where can people see your art? Do you have photos on a website or something?
I actually have another Instagram account it was my first account ever.
Really? Oh, I love it. If you feel like including it and having people go there, I can totally include the link. Cause I think that I would love to see like what you just described, like that, the bringing together of your passions.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, at the time I was, you know, following all the fashion weeks and all that stuff and denim, these are probably back in, when did I create these? 2018. Anyway. Denim was having another resurgence and a moment. And I was like, yes, I'm loving this. How am I going to, you know, do more of this? And that's how it came about. So it's Manny Martins Carmen.
I'll include that link. Thank you. That'll be great to check out. I also really related to what you said about being raised by immigrant families and some of the expectations that comes with. I'm raised by Greek immigrants I started in like pre-med and they were, I think, uncertain about what my life was going to look like when I graduated with English degree. And fair enough, that was a legit question, what I was going to do. The second question I always ask guests is about your relationship to the word fat. And also, again, I'm really curious about coming from a Portuguese family from Portugal, immigrated to Manitoba in the 70s, which I imagine looked very different than Manitoba looks today. And then you as a little girl, because I think I read your bio and you've always been fat plus size and I imagine there's a lot of layers to that. So do you want to take us through a few of them? Like, what was it like growing up fat in an immigrant family in Manitoba?
Well, it wasn't, it wasn't easy, as you can imagine, because I didn't have anybody around me that was fat or larger bodies. In preparation for this, I did go through some of my older photos, and I have friends that I've reconnected with on Facebook, and they've sent me photos from the past. And I look at them and I go, I wasn't that fat. And I'm like, why did I think that I was different? And everyone else, like, sure, everyone else was much smaller than me, but I have always felt like I needed to change my body to fit, to look like everybody else, which I wish I had somebody like myself way back then saying, no, you don't need to do that. But yes, I've been a larger girl my entire life. And, you know, my mom also is a little bit on the bigger side. She's not, I guess she has been plus size as well, but she had her own journey with, you know, trying to lose weight and going through all those things. So that impacted me watching her do that, of course. You know, I was like, well, you know, I need to do that too, right? And I have a huge background in yo-yo dieting and tried it all. And had I just accepted, you know, 2020, but had I just accepted the fact that my body was that size and that's the way it's supposed to be, I wouldn't be where I am today as far as weight fluctuation, right? Like, I would probably be that same size all the way through, which is what I've, you know, since I've come to terms with the fact that my body needs to be where it is today. This is what it needs. Since I've done that, my weight doesn't fluctuate. Like, and I'm so happy.
Right?
Not just because the weight doesn't fluctuate, but I'm happy because I don't need to, like, spend tons of time thinking about, okay, did I have too many carbs? Do I have to do this? No, I should say no to cake. No. Those things are all part of, you know, living and having fun and joyous days. You know, you got to think about where you're going to find your joy daily. It's not just about, you know, oh, this week I had fun. It has to be every day.
It's so true. Oh, joyous daily. I love that, Minnie. When did you shift from weight cycling and yo-yo dieting and the influence of diet culture and start to begin that next huge journey towards being okay with your body the way it is? What sparked that for you?
It was probably influencers and social media and following the right people, right? So when I surrounded myself with people like me, it gave me permission to just look inwards and say, hey, you know what? I'm not out of the ordinary here. Like, there are many, many people the same size. This is normal. This is not, you know, something that I need to fight. And so that helped me really look in and try to come to terms with all that. Now, I have two children. They're both older, 25 and 22, I think. And I didn't want to put on them the kind of diet stuff that I had seen growing up. And so I was really conscious about that. Although, looking back now, there was all sorts of carb cycling and all that other stuff. But it's recent that I've been very acceptant of where I'm at, and probably why I am so happy and have so much joy right now. So it's probably only been in the last 5 years. So just before COVID, I started to feel okay with and work through that. It's a journey. It's a process.
And a long one. I mean, if you're 60 and it was 5 years ago, that's over five decades of living and believing certain thoughts, the stories we tell ourselves. You know, it makes sense that your children witnessed, like you said, carb cycling and dieting and stuff like that. And it's, I think it's incredibly courageous for any of us to actually question the status quo. And you're, when you described shifting who you followed on social media, like the quote unquote, the right people, the people who were not just perpetuating this system of beliefs that's thinner is better. That's such a huge first step. And isn't it amazing? I recommend this to everyone I work with. If anyone listening hasn't done this, please do. Basically, if you do a couple scrolls through your social media and all you see is thin white people, you need to diversify immediately. Follow different size people, follow people with disabilities, follow, you know, 2SL LGBTQ, follow and like just expand. Follow lots of fat people, of course, because you're right, Manny. Like, what we see dictates what we consider quote unquote normal. And if all we see is people that don't look like us, what does that make us think about ourselves?
Exactly. And isn't that the truth? You know, like everyone says social media is such a horrible thing, but you know, the good side to all this, it has connected so many of us. Like when you live in a small town or a small city, like I do, you know, you're not exposed to people with different genders and different beliefs and different sizes. So the pool is so small. So that's what social media has done, is it's expanded all that to see that, yeah, you know, like I follow some beautiful people who aren't, you know, fat, but they are so creative and fun and just, they fill me up.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Just like, that expansiveness that brings.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you started following these people, diversifying, kind of questioning. I'm always really curious about this because this has been a really big thing in my life as I started to really liberate myself in a lot of ways. What was the impact on the people around you? Like you mentioned, you have a husband, you have kids, your family members. Like, was there an impact that way? Were there some ripples or waves that may have been felt?
Fortunately, I have been very fortunate in that everyone's been very positive. Well, nobody said anything to me directly, so
perfect.
And if they did, well, that's too bad. You know, something that comes with aging, like I didn't know what, you know, 50, like when I was 30, I didn't know what 50 was going to be like. 50 was old. And now I'm going to be 60 at the end of this year and I'm going to have a huge party. I'm actually going to take a bunch of followers on a big trip. So more details to come.
Amazing. Amazing.
I had no idea that 60, like I thought, oh my God, 60, I'm going to be like, you know, with a cane and sitting out in my backyard and just having lots of naps. I do nap though. Like I like that. But I had no idea what 60 was going to be like. And I'm hoping that because of social media, that other younger people, and I have lots of young people that follow me as well, can see that aging is a beautiful thing. There's so much freedom and so much joy to be had. But don't wait till you get to 60. Enjoy it right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I love that you've got a whole group of followers of all ages, that you're redefining what it looks like to be almost 60. Again, that was one of the things that really drew me to you, because we still don't see it very much, especially with women. There's a real ageist, misogynist thing that happens. And I've worked with clients who, and this, I think I forget the official term, but it's basically like they start to feel invisible once they hit 40. It's like invisibilization or something. I forget the term, but it's a very, and I've started to notice it. So I just turned 43, and in some circumstances, it's really freeing. And in other circumstances, it's like, oh, I'm totally being treated as if I'm not here. And it's so strange. Did you experience that as you've gotten older?
I haven't, because I wasn't in the traditional workforce. When I had my children, I decided to work from home. And because I'm a graphic designer, I was able to freelance. So I left my agency work and started working for myself. So I think had I been in that situation, like in a formal work situation, I probably would have seen that and probably would be, this job should go to, the younger person because they could relate or whatever. And so, no, I didn't see that as much. It's a funny thing, my husband still works. He's probably going to retire in a few years, but he's over 60 now. He's 62, I think. And he doesn't get that at work. They look at him as like, oh, he's like, got a lot of knowledge and, he's got, super gray hair and a great big gray beard. And he doesn't get any ageist comments whatsoever. But, as women, my gosh, you're beyond your prime. Okay, go pack it up and get in the corner. No.
There's a really interesting theory. I apologize. I don't know the attribution. I've seen it and read it quite a bit from different sources, that the idea is that the reason why patriarchy does this to women is because as women get older and more wise and more in their power, they become more of a threat to the established status quo. Whoa. And I have to say, I wouldn't have started a podcast called Fat Joy in my 20s or 30s. It's now, because I'm in my 40s, I have a lot of self-generated safety and security. I recognize the privilege that I have. I want to use it to change shit up, to fuck shit up. Like, I am totally a threat, right? And so, of course, they want us to feel invisible and like we don't matter and take away our voices and being seen, right? Like, I noticed this a lot. And I've talked to a lot of others as well who feel the same, because, they can't do anything to me now.
I know, exactly. It's like, we need the... We need to be taken seriously and we need to be listened to. Like, why is it that, our experiences and our wisdom doesn't matter? Like, why? We have done all these things through our lives. And even if it's somebody who hasn't been in the workforce or hasn't had a career per se and has been, raising children, my God, that is the hardest job ever. And the experience and wisdom that comes from doing that, from raising humans, is incredible. Why should we, put those people aside? And we should be taking them in and learning from them and, asking them to contribute. Drives me nuts.
Yes, agree. I totally agree. So you decided to do something about it. You were on this journey. You're like, hang on, I'm just going to love myself. I'm going to relax and be in my body fully. And what had you, was there a moment where you're like, maybe I'm going to post something online? Like, tell me about what led up to that. Cause that's a big step to go quote unquote public.
Yes. And so I never really liked to be in pictures. Shocking, right? but what happened was so this was the beginning of lockdown. And of course, like many people, I needed, although I'm an introvert, I'm an introverted extrovert is what I like to say. I still like to be able to be filled up by people. And with lockdown, I found myself really going inwards and just not, you know, not being very happy like many people, you know, with the fear and everything. So what I did was I thought, well, I've been following all these people and they're doing this stuff. Maybe I should do something. And so I put one video up on TikTok and thought, okay, what the heck? Let's just do it. And if you go back and you watch it, it's, I'm not even smiling. I'm all nervous and it's fun to watch.
Was it a fashion-based video? Was it fashion-oriented?
I think it was. Loosely, it was something about putting on a cape and being fearless or something. I don't know. but I was modeling some sort of, you know, sweatsuit set, which was, you know, the uniform for COVID. So during that, so, you know, when that happened, I thought, okay, perfect. You know, we can't go out. We can't do stuff. This is all very insular right now. I'm going to go into my art and I'm going to create a whole new series and I'm going to paint. And I didn't. I couldn't. I just wasn't. See, my art comes from experiences and usually my travel experiences. And I just couldn't. There was nothing that I wanted to create physically with my hands. So I thought, well, okay, let's do this. And so I taught myself how to do videos and editing and all that stuff on my own. I just posted one video. Okay. Got 5 likes. Yay. Post another one, then another one. And then there was one video that went viral. And it was the one that talks about ageism and just to be who you are and screw everybody else. And that's my proudest moment, because for that one to go viral is the best, right? Like, that's what the whole thing is about.
Yeah. Oh, that's so moving. And so this thing goes viral. You're in lockdown. You're in Winnipeg. Like, there's just like, what, it just feels like such a contrast between what was happening in your online life and what was happening in your kind of like in real life. How did that feel? How did you hold both? Like, what happened next? Like, that's just a lot suddenly swirling in at a time when really nothing was swirling.
Yeah. And it was difficult. There were lots of times where I was like, feeling like I'm an imposter, you know, this isn't really something that, like, who cares what I have to say? Like, all those questions. But then I tried to take the focus back to, I'm doing this for me. This is something that makes me happy. I get to play with my clothes because I can't put them on and, you know, go out anywhere. And so I just started to dress up and show people, hey, you know, have you thought about putting orange and pink together? And by taking the focus away from not being good enough, it just was about me sharing what I know and what I feel and just how it makes me feel.
Yeah, what a great way to kind of quiet that inner critic, that inner saboteur voice that, and, you know, a lot of times that voice shows up because we're taking a risk and it's trying to protect us and keep us small and safe. And to like overcome that takes a lot of courage. So I love that you flipped it and you kind of like almost like reconnected to a different anchor point. Like, oh yeah, this isn't about me, or like in having to be a quote unquote expert, which is like the whole imposter syndrome thing. Like, I'm just going to like play with my clothes. I love that. Wow. Okay. So did you, when you went viral, what happened next? Did you just keep making videos? Did people who've known you from 30 years ago be like, oh, hey, I saw you doing this video? Like, what are some of the weird and wacky things that happened at that time?
You know, the best part of it was some of the responses that I got. I didn't get any kind of weird stuff happen, although I did reconnect with some old friends from, you know, my 20s. But that's mostly because I was just more online, right? I remember my sister showing me, she's younger than me, and she's like showing me how to use Facebook. I'm like, that's stupid. Like, why would anybody want to share their lives on?
I love it. Hello, it's Sophia, and I'm jumping into this episode to invite you to subscribe, rate, and review the Fat Joy podcast. If you've been enjoying the guests and their stories, please let the algorithms know by subscribing, giving us a 5-star rating, and leaving us a review. You'll be helping raise awareness of Fat Joy because then we'll get ranked higher on the podcast charts. I mean, we're already in the top 2.5 globally, which is amazing, but I want top 1%, please. I love doing this podcast and creating the platform for guests to share their stories. So I would be so grateful if you can help me keep doing that by subscribing, rating, and leaving a review. Thank you, lovely. Okay, back to the episode.
And so she's said that to me before, is like, remember when I showed you how to use Facebook? But the thing that keeps me going is that the messages that I get, the DMs, the comments from people saying that they appreciate what I'm putting out there and that I've made a difference in their lives. Like, oh my God, that is like, it floors me every single time. And it's just so amazing. And I think back and I go, wow, you know, had I had somebody like that, I think that I would have been a little happier through those, all those years. You know, I keep telling myself that if this ever becomes work, I'm not doing it again, ever. But as long as I'm still impacting and helping people, then I'm just going to keep doing it. Who knows what's going to happen, right?
This is the thing. Like, you're so open to whatever shows up that lots can show up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and I just, before we got on, I had an email from a local brand, a Canadian brand, inviting me to an event.
Oh,
and so
you're so fancy now. I love it. When people write and tell you you've changed their lives, what are they pointing to? Is it like how so?
So most of the comments are about, actually a lot like what you said. Like, I had no idea that, you know, or I've always thought that tucking my shirts in made me look bigger. And they may still have that thought, but they do it anyway and go, screw you. I'm going to fucking tuck it in and I'm going to rock it. Right. So it's that kind of thing where I'm like, wow. And with color, like, again, this goes back to the invisibility, right? And especially as we age, you know, people start to think that, oh my God, you know, you're so eccentric or you're just, yeah, I'm extra, so deal with it. And so those comments about, you know, you're giving me permission to just be an experiment and be loud and, yeah, so good.
Oh, that might be the title of this episode. I'm extra, deal with it. That's really perfect. Yeah.
It's funny because I put that on a t-shirt.
Oh, you did?
I know guacamole is extra, but so am I.
That is perfect. That is perfect. Wow. Oh, it's just, I just keep hearing over and over again in your stories and what you're saying, it's like you're giving others permission to be themselves. It's like so permission giving because you gave yourself permission.
Exactly. Yes. It really is about just, you know, hey, I'm going to show up so you can show up as well.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. What? There's another piece of this that I often think about with influencers who have gone viral and I'm curious about, and I've been very fortunate to talk to a few of them and ask them a similar question, which is this idea of responsibility around kind of who you are, your messaging, who shows up. This is true, but it feels like lately within the fat positive, fat liberation community, there's been some people who, you know, we really love and admire who have elected to have weight loss surgery or elected to go on weight loss medication. And I totally believe in body autonomy and at this end think people should do whatever they want. And at the same time, there is a feeling of like, it's weird because I don't know them, but this feeling almost of a betrayal. So I think a lot about that, like, and that's not fair of me to feel. I mean, people can do whatever they want. I can do whatever I want. But it just makes me think about like the role of influencer and how people, and I'm starting, as my podcast is getting bigger and bigger, I'm starting to experience this a little bit myself. There's, oh, I don't know, like, kind of hopes and dreams and expectations and things like that that get put on you. And I'm really curious about how you think about that, especially with your own, and I don't know what yours are, but like kind of your own version of fat politic and fashion. And do you know what I'm saying? Like there's something in that that's part of going viral and being an influencer as well.
I agree. And I always try to come back to being authentic and being myself. And I caveat that with, you know, this, me, myself, is ever evolving. So, you know, when I started, I was, you know, a timid and unsure person. I'm a little bit more extra now and a little bit more confident. And so, you know, as long as I'm being true to myself, I think that everyone can just, you know, do what they want. But I totally agree with you. Like when I see people having weight loss surgery or, you know, like I love them the way they are and I love watching their journey. And then all of a sudden they decide to do this. And I'm like, oh, my first reaction is, well, then why? You're so good the way that you are. But then I go back and I'm like, what the fuck? This is about that person and not me. Like, that's their choice. That's what they need right now, right? So we need to be more empathetic about people and creators in particular that, you know, they're people too. they're not the Kardashians. And I never, ever want to be there. But I understand the kind of pressure that's put on creators. And I always try to come back to, you know what, this is it. You're in my sunroom. This is where I shoot. This is like real life. There is no, you know, I never use filters unless I'm being funny with them. And I tell you like it is. Like if I'm wearing shapewear, I'm wearing shapewear. If I'm not, I'm going to tell you that too. And the decision is up to you, what you want, right? It's like, yes, I've thought about weight loss surgery. Who hasn't? If you're a fat person, you've gone through it all, right? So who knows? Maybe in the future I might do that. Probably not, but who knows, right? Our decisions are our own, and it shouldn't impact how you see somebody else.
Yeah. And like, just because you choose to do something doesn't mean that I'm bad for not doing it or wrong for not doing it. Like that's that piece, right? Yeah. It's such an interesting tension to sit in because I think we feel like we know influencers, but we know what's being shown to us.
Exactly.
You know, like, I don't know what happens outside of the sunroom. There could be I mean, you could be a Kardashian for all we know. but in the sunroom, you're Manny. Yeah. Do you consider what you do advocacy?
I don't think I've ever really thought about that in that way. No, I just show up being me, having fun, occasionally trying to make people laugh, smile. But I don't think of it as advocacy, or I haven't. Oh, interesting.
It makes me want to look up a definition. Cool. Yeah, because I'm like, actually, because now you're making me think about it a little more closely, too. Like, what is advocacy? What is an activist? I will say there's one of the things I go to, because I think about this, again, I think about a lot of stuff, I guess. I think about this question as well. Deepa Iyer, I've mentioned this on the podcast before, has what's called this social change map. And it's basically, I forget how many roles, but basically it's almost like a wheel, and kind of social change, social justice, liberatory work is kind of in the center. And then there's all these spokes going off. And I think there's like 12 of them. I'll post a link in the show notes for people who want to like correct everything I'm saying and know what it actually says. But I think there's about 12, and it has all these different roles that you can take to engage in social change. So like advocacy, like, you know, picket lines and marching is one of many roles. Caregiving is another role. Storytelling is another role. So for me, I think if I look at that social change map, then having people on my podcast to tell stories is an act of advocacy. And that makes me feel good because this is what I can do. I can't do a lot of marching for a lot of reasons, but I can do this. So it made me wonder how you think about the bigger picture of what you do.
You know, it's funny because as you were saying that, I was thinking, well, you know, if somebody attacks somebody, I'm there. I'm like, hey, you, no, that's not right. I'll start marching. But I don't think of it as but you're right. Like the things that we do are a form of advocacy. Like I absolutely stand for, you know, equality and all that wonderful stuff. But I guess I haven't formally, you know, said, hey, I'm an activist. And yeah, I quietly activating.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's true too. Like it doesn't, I think, because I've been on a journey with this word activist, because I'm kind of like, no, I'm not. I'm like small potatoes. I don't do anything. But then again, it's like, but how things change is one person at a time showing up in oppositional response to the forces of oppression. So you are an activist, Manny. I am an activist, Sophia. Like maybe as we, I almost wonder if stepping in and claiming the power of that word also might be an interesting journey too. Like what would that open if I felt really powerful in my activist energy? Like what would that do for you if you felt really powerful in that energy?
Yeah, you're right. Like, and maybe that's something that comes with the more we do this, the more we see the impact, the more we want to do that, right? So because what I'm doing is making a difference, perhaps then I need to keep doing it. And then as I define it for myself, maybe that's part of the wording or part of the thoughts behind it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, like your flavor of activism is XYZ. I think that's so true. Like when you start to get those emails from people where you've changed their lives, like, oh my God, I cry. Like, I'm like, you, like someone wrote me and said that they were, I think, volunteering or working in their kids' library, and they were weeding for books that had kind of not up to date ways of thinking about people. So maybe there was some racism, some homophobia, some, you know, anti-trans sentiment, but they had never thought about size before. So they started reading all the books that had anti-fatness in them and then got budget to buy a whole bunch of fat positive books. Like I sobbed. I could sob right now. Like the fact that a conversation I had with someone led to that. I mean, the work that you're doing is leading to people showing up more in their power, more confidently.
Just imagine the ripple effect of what that does, right? That's these children. Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
And the people who watch your videos who are suddenly more confident, and maybe they ask for the raise, or maybe they set a boundary with a family member, or they go on that
date. Oh my God,
date.
That gives me goosebumps.
Right? You're totally an activist. I'm just going to declare it. Yes. All right. Oh my God, so fun.
Oh, so awesome. So great. You know, I was one of these people that believed that social media was very fake and the people that you meet there are, you know, not real and all that stuff. And man, has it ever changed, because I've been fortunate enough to meet some of these people that follow me, and oh, they're just as beautiful as they are in, you know, online as they are in person. So yeah, it's who you choose to believe in and follow and be part of.
Right. Oh, I love that so much. I also hear so much trust in that, like trusting in the good of people, which actually feels really hard a lot of the times right now, but not losing that capacity for open-heartedness.
Because it's, like, I do believe people are generally good first, and, you know, there's just a few that aren't. So at the beginning, I would get some hate comments and nasty comments, but I haven't, I've been fortunate enough, touch wood, to not have any of that stuff. And when I do have one or two sort of quasi-negative comments, my community is on them. So watch out. There's a lot of backlash.
Yeah. That's what you want. You've got like your allies by your side. That's incredible.
Absolutely. They're just amazing. I love them all. They fill me up so much. And the more they fill me up, the more I can give back to them, right? So I just, they're amazing.
And I love that you've met people too. Like
it's so cool. Well, locally, I was at a concert in another city up north in Brandon, and my husband and I were walking down to the floor seats and stuff, and all of a sudden, hey, you're Maddie, aren't you? Like, yes. So I was like, what? What's going on? But it was so cool. Yeah. And I just, you know, I say this on my channel all the time. If you recognize me, I want you to stop and say hi, because I want to meet you. So it's so fun. And just yesterday I met another follower, and that was so, so cool.
That's amazing. Oh, what a beautiful moment. I've had that happen once, and it was like, oh, I'm a celebrity now. Like I was so chuffed. I'm like, this is great. Only once. So I'm going to also echo anyone listening. If you see me, please say hello. I never thought to even like say that before, but it's so, it's like, what a gift to meet people who love your message, right? And feel inspired by you. Oh, so good. So Manny, I feel like you live from a place of joy, but I'm going to ask the joy question anyway, because I'm super curious about your supply. So what has you connect to joy? What brings you joy? I'm also really curious your thoughts on, do we choose joy? Do we create circumstances for it? Does it just kind of happen? Like, what are your thoughts on joy in general?
Well, that's an excellent question because, and it's multifaceted. It's yes to all those things. You create it, it just happens, and you can walk into it. So for me, joy for me is creativity. And when I can impart some creativity or when I'm being creative and I then am joyful, it is contagious and it will be put out to whoever is near me or whoever is watching me. So I believe that, you know, if I'm dressing, this is so funny. The other day I went to the grocery store and of course I was dressed extra and somebody, it was this fellow, he was in his car waiting for his partner, his wife probably, and older fellow, and he rolled down the window as I was walking towards the store. He goes, "Hey, I love your outfit." And I'm like, "Thanks." And he was still there when I came out of the store, and he goes, "Made my day." And he had the biggest smile, and I'm like, "You know what? My job is done." And so joy can be purposeful. If you feel joy, you will impart that onto others. But you can also search for joy, you know, like look for people who are having fun and look for things that make you spark. And yeah, I don't always have joy. I mean, I'm human just like anybody else. There are times where I get too far into my head and I'm like, and it's funny because as I go through this process, I try to figure out how long I stay in that non-joyful state and how do I work through it and come out. My defense mechanism in the past has always been to push everything down and not deal with it and just carry on, you know. And I am asking myself each time that I go into a non-joyful place, like a dark place, whether I should spend time there to figure out where I'm at, or if I should just push it down and carry on. So you just have to find it and create it for yourself.
I feel like in what you said, I heard some of the perhaps stereotypes, but I also think, Drew, I am married to an artist, but that like kind of artist propensity for like rumination and like kind of really being in the depths. And I really love what you said. And I also am a creative writing coach, so I also work with a lot of creatives. And there's this kind of, I think you need to have those depths as an artist so that you can kind of like pull from it. But I'm loving what you're saying on the other side is like, yeah, I can choose. So when I want to go deeper and be in that space, I can. And I can also recognize when maybe I'm now just kind of spinning and it's maybe more about the joy of suffering as opposed to joy and like kind of like come out of it. That's a skill that I don't know that a lot of creatives have developed. Have you always been able to do that?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us the secret, Manny.
I don't know yet. I do know that I'm more aware, right? So when I'm spinning and it's going deeper, I am aware. I have, you know, I know the things I'm supposed to do. I don't always do them, but I do know that I can reach out to somebody and say, "Hey, you know what? I need to just chat a minute," or "I'm going to do a big cry. It's okay." And, you know, the Portuguese community is a lot about, or has been in the past, and I grew up with this, you know, of this sort of sorrow and, you know, being very, and you probably know this too as a Greek, it's I don't know, what is it? Is it a melancholy kind of a thing?
And yeah, I don't use the best word, but I tend to think of it as a bit of a victim complex we have, especially as immigrants and the hardness of life. And I mean, I don't know if it's the same in Portuguese, but in Greek, we have like rebetiko, which is like this style of music that is literally like, woe is me. Yeah, there we go. And there's a catharsis to it. There's a catharsis, but it can also like just become like the only way of being sometimes.
Yes. And, you know, and I look back to my ancestors and they were like I remember my grandmother having lots and lots of joyful moments. But there was lots of like, woe is me and oh my gosh. And oh, it's so terrible. And, you know,
yeah. My grandfather would be like, oh, Manulamu, which is like, oh, the mother, you know, like that. That's what I remember him saying all the time. Yeah. So bringing awareness and noticing when this is happening. And then what I guess my words for it from what I heard you say is like, and then like using those kind of tools, like calling a person, having a big cry, to kind of shift that. So bringing like intentionality to when that's happening and when it's not actually serving you anymore.
Yeah. And you have to, and I tried to remember the last time it happened and the fact that, you know what, I got out of it. It's okay. You know, it may have lasted 2 weeks that time, but it only lasted 2 weeks. So, you know, but like, and in the moment, it's hard to remember back. Oh yeah, right. I've been here before. But if you can bring yourself to think, right, this is familiar. I know I've been here and I know I can get through it. And it's going to be better on the other side. It's going to be better tomorrow. It's going to be better.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I had a therapist tell me once, feelings aren't forever. And I was like, what? But that's true. Like, yeah, whatever I'm feeling in this moment is not forever. And suddenly that does give a little bit of a tether that I will come out the other side, you know? Yeah, so interesting. Manny, this has been such a beautiful conversation. I feel like I have 100 more questions I could ask you. I totally want to ask about like fails and what has not gone to plan and you know, series you've done that you've loved. So maybe we'll just have to have you back. But I love where we went. I love that we explored a lot of beautiful aspects of what it is to be a human, really. How do we human? We do it by being extra. Deal with it. Oh, what a joy. Thank you, Manny.
Thank you. It's been amazing.
Before we go, I'd like to read a poem because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem. I feel like Manny Martin's Carmen has a particular rebel energy that invites us in. It pulls us close. And we know it, before we know it, like, we're hers. We love her. I think that's one of Manny's gifts. And I feel the same energy in the heart of this poem by Dorothy Chan that is called Triple Sonnet for My Aggressive Forehead. Dad thinks my forehead is too Godzilla, too Tarzan, too Wonder Woman. Tells me not to tie my hair back, exposing it like it's the Frankenstein monster from beneath my childhood bed or the mollusk that challenged the world. And Dad, I love you, but you should know that I'm a nightmare as a woman who can make the earth stand still, calling all UFOs from planets beyond to paint me on a canvas just as I am. A Chinese girl nicknamed Yellow Fever, chowing down on all the pork buns and chicken biscuits and shrimp banh mi at the buffet, and of course, all the men. And I star in my own B-movie, Give It an XXX. Every girl's dream of playing opposite King Kong. And you know, I'm not some Faye Ray type who screams at the sight of a hand. And Dad, I think about all the ape toys you bought me when I was a child because you never wanted me to be alone, never wanted me to go a day without laughing or plotting. And did I mention that you were born on Halloween, which makes me half evil? I'm joking, but Dad, you've got to let me keep my forehead despite your old school Chinese beliefs of girls hiding their warrior brains. And I know you're just looking out for me, but my forehead has its own life, like an invisible screen, one-way glass where the ad men are watching the women try on lipstick. But in my forehead, it's the other way around. Because let's let the boys play. And the girls watch for once, because every lip could use a bit more rouge, purple, crimson, burnt orange, hot pink. How at once I want to dress up as a flight attendant, an accountant, someone at the front of the class holding a ruler. And yes, if I fill out a survey from a sex magazine, I'm checking off forehead as my favorite body part. Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly fat joy day, and we'll talk again soon.